Mr. Blydner, you have two choices. We will kill your dog, Moose, or randomly shoot 100 innocent adult human beings. What is your preference?
There are no innocent adults. Say, do you have enough ammo? I think there's some in the trunk of my car. Come on, Moose, we're out of here.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Last Tuesday and Wednesday, when I was putting together episode 311, it was particularly difficult because Moose, who has epilepsy, was having what are called cluster seizures. Those things can kill a dog or a person. They literally fry your brain. Epilepsy is an electrical storm in the brain, and like any electrical device, if it can't be cooled down, it melts down. They were so severe, I was about to post on social media requesting prayers on his behalf. Jesus came to save humans because we are catastrophically flawed and fucked up and capable of terrible evil. But animals, especially dogs, need no redemption. They are pretty much perfectly formed. Ironically, last week's episode was in no small part a pushback against people who puff out their chests and proudly call themselves experts. Most people who claim they are an expert at anything are not to be trusted. In fact, the smartest people are those who use the phrase, "I don't know," the most often. There are different intensities of seizure. The basics are called petit mal seizures, which are kind of subtle until you know what to look for. You might miss them entirely. People just sort of zone out, as we all do, but the epileptic isn't daydreaming. And even that can be lethal. Imagine that happening to you while you're crossing a busy street or doing electrical work or standing on the fourth rung of a ladder as you paint a ceiling. In Moose's case, besides those petit mals, he has grand mals. And those are almost as tough on me and my family as they are on Moose. The violence is hard to imagine. You have to witness one to understand. Once he was standing when one came over him and his legs twitched and he popped up like a spring and then fell. He could not land as he would normally. When he hit the floor, his legs splayed. He smacked his jaw, bled from his mouth. He had difficulty walking and sometimes cried out in pain for days afterwards. As we've traveled this road with Moose, we've been disappointed by a number of experts. The first time we saw him having a seizure, his mouth was jacked wide open. As he walked around, he wasn't breathing. We thought he had something caught in his windpipe. Jumped in the car, raced off to a vet. Before we arrived, he began to breathe again. My suspicion was that he'd swallowed a nut from a palm tree, and maybe he was throwing it up and it got stuck in his throat. When we got to the vet's, I described what happened in some detail. The vet was perplexed. He x-rayed Moose. There was nothing in his air passage or stomach. When he had another seizure, we returned to the same vet, and that was a big mistake. Why hadn't that guy suspected a seizure on the first visit? Canine epilepsy is not all that uncommon. They say about 5% of dogs are afflicted with it. Well, suddenly this vet was an expert on it. He prescribed phenobarbital, one damn dangerous drug with plenty of side effects. Then he gave us his expert opinion on how to handle the seizures. Just let him lie there, he advised. The moment those words escaped his lips, I knew he was full of shit and no more an expert on canine epilepsy than I was. It is not a good idea to let a dog thrash around violently on a tile floor, as I had already found out. The after effects of the seizures are heartbreaking. Moose is a very athletic little guy. He can tear around at great speed and jump like a circus dog. He's extremely sure-footed, almost cat-like in some ways. But after a long seizure, sometimes one or two legs won't function. He tries to walk, but he can't. Then when he regains mobility, He'll walk face first into a wall or bang his head on furniture. He'll flinch when you try to pet him, and a slight noise will also spook him. It's clear his vision and hearing are both impaired. He'll circle around the room again and again, sniffing everywhere he goes, trying to find out where he is. My older daughter picked Moose. It was about 5 years ago. Both my kids have been pestering us for a dog, so we caved. Well, not caved, really. It was long overdue. We went to the rescue place. There were two pups left from the litter. They were so tiny they could easily have fit in coffee mugs. And one was about half the size of the other. The runt of the litter, of course. That's the one my daughter wanted. The woman put the pups in my arms and one slept. The other went right for my face with a tiny pink tongue. When that happened, I flashed on a memory like a clip from a movie I'd seen long ago. I had not had a dog since I was a kid. He was a black Labrador and sweet beyond belief. When he passed away, I cried for a week, swore I would never get another dog. I just couldn't deal with parting with one ever again. I recall his purchase. One night, not too long before Christmas, my old man said, "Let's go get a dog." And we took the subway from Queens into Manhattan. Destination was Gimbel's Department Store, which had a massive pet department tucked in a corner on an upper floor. We took 5 escalators to get there. You could hear the pups before you saw them, barking, whining. An old guy ran the department, probably since his teens. He had a lazy eye and wore a chino jacket with his name embroidered over the pocket. It was an old-time name, like Hank or Earl, the kind of name people don't give their kids anymore. At that time, we frequently visited my Uncle John, who lives in the Catskill Mountains in upstate New York. I've talked a lot about Uncle John in this show. He was like a second father to me. My dad was my North Star, keeping me on the straight and narrow, while Uncle John was my adventure resource. He was an outdoorsman, a hunter, a fisherman, who'd had a lot of dogs, beagles and blue tick hounds and boxers, and most fascinating to me, English pit bull terriers. If you're unfamiliar with the breed, they have heads like Tyrannosaurus rex, with beady little Dorito-shaped eyes, and they were bred from one thing, fighting. Of course, I found them utterly fascinating and wondered what it would be like to own such a killing machine. Maybe it could be trained to hunt commies. One of Uncle John's pit bulls was a stone psycho named Freddy. Yes, dogs can be psychos too, although it's far less common with them than humans. And Freddy's amazing story was featured in episode 35, Dogs Are Better Than People. That's in the July 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. But back to Gimbel's Department Store and my acquisition of Lance, the Labrador. When old Hank greeted us, I asked, "Do you have any pit bull terriers?" Hank's wandering eye nearly popped out of his skull.
"What, are you looking for trouble?"
My father laughed and asked Hank to see the litter of Labradors. Hank opened the cage, removed 2 of them. One was fast asleep. The other was awake. Hank put them both into my dad's arms. One stayed asleep while the other stood on his hind legs and slathered my old man's face with his tongue. "We'll take this one," Dad said. Dad paid for the dog, and Hank gave us his papers. He came from a breeder in Nebraska. His mom was named Smoky Lady, and his dad was Caesar. Both of them were champion stock and had won some awards. Hank put my puppy in a cardboard box with a shredded newspaper. He cautioned us not to feed him milk, as he said that would promote worms, and suggested we give him Rice Krispies for a day before switching to puppy chow. My pup was very young, just 5 weeks old. We rode home in the subway, and the joy I felt with that box on my lap, with a living, breathing dog inside, well, that was not matched until I held my children moments after they were born. I could feel him moving around. If I pressed my face to a hole in the box, I could see him in there with his big brown innocent eyes. Then that cold black shiny wet snout replaced it. When we got him home, he had a designated room in the finished basement. I covered the floor with newspaper because we knew he'd be piddling. At bedtime, he started to whimper because he missed his mom or his brothers or just didn't want to be alone, so I slept down there with him. After a day or two, I removed all the newspapers except for a couple of sheets in the corner, and he was such a smart guy, he knew that's where he was supposed to go. He didn't have to be taught a thing. When I'd go to school, I'd race home to be with him. Couldn't get enough of him. He was a field dog, for sure. He seemed impervious to cold or rain or sleet. Unlike Moose, who's more of a French boulevardier. Unless it's sunny and 70, Moose doesn't step outside. Moose, by the way, is a mutt, but mostly poodle. He only eats organic beef, and it must be paired with the perfect Beaujolais. One Saturday in February, it was a sunny day, but bitter cold, low teens. My old man said, let's take the dog up to Pelham Bay Park, which is about all of 4 square miles. It's the closest thing to wilderness in New York City. It borders Long Island Sound with the famed Orchard Beach. In summer, you don't want to be there. It's a mass of humanity. But in the off-season, it can be fun, beautiful even. Mom packed some sandwiches and filled a thermos with hot tea. Dad, Lance, and I hopped in the Chevy, cranked up the heat, and away we went. Now, at home, Lance was always leashed when outside, but at this park, he could run free, and that's what he did. He charged into the woods like his ass was on fire, and then circled back to us. It was great to see him in his element. By the way, if you're wondering how he came by his name, we had no idea what to name him. So Mom grabbed an atlas and looked up Labrador. There was a town up there called Point Lance. It's still there. Population 106. After we got through the woods to the water, we were not surprised to see a layer of skim ice that went out at least a quarter mile. And this was salt water and not still water. There was plenty of good chop in the wind, which says a lot about just how cold it was. Then I did something very stupid. I grabbed a stick, flung it across the ice. I'd forgotten that my dog was a retriever. He went right after that stick and cut through the ice like a chainsaw. He was only 3 months old. I was petrified, screaming at him to come back. He ignored me until he reached the stick and then reversed course. He took a slightly different path coming back, kept smashing that ice as he swam. Finally, he reached shore, dropped the stick at my feet. Mission accomplished. He was shivering uncontrollably. I snatched him up and opened my coat, put him inside. Dad handed me the thermos. I poured Lance a cup of hot tea and he lapped it up. After a while, the shivering stopped, but I held on to him for a long time. He kept staring into my face from inside my coat. Was it gratitude? Of course it was. We sat on the rocks looking out across the glittering Long Island Sound, and suddenly it turned from green to slate gray. A mass of clouds had moved in. Without the sun, the cold intensified. The gash in the ice that Lance had torn was already resealed. It felt like snow was on the way. The three of us double-timed it through the woods, back to the shelter of the car. Once inside, the old man revved the engine to hurry the heater along. When we arrived back in Queens, it was just dusk. Mom had a pot roast simmering in the stove. We told her and my brother about our adventures with Lance. At only 3 months of age, he had distinguished himself as an intrepid explorer, a canine Shackleton who had triumphed over the perils of a hostile Arctic climate. Life was good. 11 years later, Lance still wasn't even gray around the muzzle. He was downright youthful. Back then, the Guinness Book of World Records said that some Labrador had been the champion of longevity, had clocked 25 years or so. I always figured Lance would be around forever. One day, he didn't want to walk, didn't want to eat much, threw up when he did. So it was off to some veterinarian, who quickly told us Lance had a belly full of malignant tumors. They put him down and asked how I wanted to dispose of the body. Such a sensitive phrase. I said I'd take care of it. My father looked at me. We had no idea what we would do. We had no place to bury him. So we called Uncle John. He had a couple of acres up in the mountains. He told us to come on up. Lance was a big boy, almost 90 pounds. He was zipped into a bag, and when we eased him into the trunk of the car, he felt like 900 pounds. It was a 120-mile drive. I don't think my dad and I exchanged a word on the entire trip. The miles passed as a blur because my eyes were too wet to see properly. When we arrived, Uncle John walked us out to the tool shed that my brother and I had helped him build one summer years before. When we built it, the sky was blue and the grass was green, and the sun was warm on our necks. I never imagined I'd be pulling shovels and a pickaxe from that shed for such a purpose on a cold gray day in November. We got to work on a spot near a crabapple tree. I'd spent a lot of time with that tree. Those crabapples made really great projectiles for the slingshot my old man had made for me. Everywhere I looked was another great memory. The flagstone patio where I had stood by Uncle John as an August downpour soaked us while we barbecued steaks. The screened-in porch where we'd sat on so many evenings telling stories and sipping beers. The lush lawns where Lance had chased 1,000 balls. As we dug in, we stopped and looked at each other. The ground was like stone. The Catskill Mountains get insanely cold and a lot earlier than New York City. I'd been there when the temperature was 35 below zero. We had a long, hard job ahead of us. It took us about 5 hours to dig a deep enough grave. The dirt was so damn hard, Uncle John broke 2 hickory handles on the pickaxes, which necessitated a trip to town to buy new ones. We really could have used jackhammers, or a backhoe, or dynamite. I don't recall what words were said as we laid Lance to rest. That's such a weird phrase, isn't it? Wherever he was, I didn't want him to be resting. I wanted him to be charging through the woods, or chasing birds, or smashing through ice and then tucked inside my coat, slurping hot tea. My aunt had a nice dinner for us. They asked if we'd stay the night, but we wanted to get home because my mother just might have loved Lance most of all. She was certainly his favorite. It took me a long, long time to get over Lance, but clearly, I never really did. And now there is Moose. Very different dog. He's only 16 pounds, but like Lance, it's all muscle and heart. When the coyotes come around at night and howl and call him out, he hits the door and snarls like he's ready to throw down with the entire pack. If the doorbell rings, it's on. He has only one speed. Go. Yet, when I'm down, he always knows and climbs out of my lap to lick my face into a smile. There was a 6-month period a while back where Moose was seizure-free. We thought he might somehow have just grown out of it, which is common in kids with epilepsy. And maybe he will again. I hope so. But it doesn't matter. He's still my best friend. Well, my second best friend. Best friend number 2. Hell, you know what I mean. You can have two best friends if they have four legs. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Slide over to thatlarryshow.com for more about Lance and Moose, as well as hundreds of other episodes. While you're there, click a subscribe button so you never miss an episode. If you want to write to me, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. If you like what you just heard and want to help me keep the show going, click the Patreon or PayPal button and join the Take No Shit Dojo, from whence this show emanates each week. Here you will be among friends, good people who love dogs and America and hate commies. You'll also get access to our deep bench of senseis who have helped many listeners through rough spots on the highway of life. Whether work, home, school, romance, drop us a line. We'll try to help you out. Remember to kiss your dog every day. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no shit.